This morning we're going to be looking at Israel's demand for a king. This is part of our series on the road to redemption. I've learned in previous weeks not to ask the people who've been here what I preached on the previous week because they never remember and it makes me sad. So we've talked about the Israelites' rebellion, getting ready to enter the promised land. And last week we talked about everybody doing what was right in their own eyes. And so today we're going to talk about Israel's demand for a king. And this text comes from 1 Samuel chapter 4. Verse 1 Samuel chapter 8, verses 4 through 8. Now, this is a really important text because a lot of times when we look at this text, we kind of miss some of the really important stuff that's a part of it. So this morning we're going to look at this. It says, "Then all the elders of Israel gathered together and came to Samuel at Ramah, and they said to him, 'Behold, you have grown old.'" Well, that's not very nice. Usually, if you're old, you don't need someone to tell you. "You've grown old, and your sons do not walk in your ways." Some of you are sitting there going, "Wow, this sounds familiar, doesn't it? You've grown old and your sons don't walk in your ways. Now appoint a king for us to judge us like all the nations." Okay, next slide, please. "But the thing was displeasing in the sight of Samuel when they said, 'Give us a king to judge us.' And Samuel prayed to the Lord. And the Lord said to Samuel, 'Listen to the voice of the people in regard to all that they say to you, for they have not rejected you, but they have rejected me from being king over them." So if we can slip back to that previous slide. So this is a really interesting text because the children of Israel have gathered, and I want you to listen to what they say. There's two specific things that they give as reasons that they want a king, and I want you to pay attention to what they are. Number one, "You've grown old and your sons aren't good." Samuel had appointed his sons to replace him and be the judges of Israel, and the sons were not good. And then the second thing they say is, "Give us a king to judge us like all the other nations." Right? All the other nations. So this morning we're going to look at these two reasons that the children of Israel give for wanting a king. We're not going to spend as much time really focusing on their demand for a king as much as their reasoning. All right, so let's look at this first part. He says, "Behold, you have grown old, and your sons do not walk in your ways, so appoint a king to judge over us." Now, how many of you have ever been disappointed by somebody? What is really startling to me is the number of people that went, "Nah, everybody's always been awesome. No one's ever disappointed me." Maybe I should have gone with this one. How many of you have ever disappointed somebody else? More. That's fantastic. More hands went up. There you go. A little catharsis this morning. One of the things that I have found fascinating in my years in ministry is the number of people who I will encounter who used to go to church but don't go to church anymore. And this is their rationale. Somebody upset me. Have any of you ever heard that reason for somebody not going to church? Somebody upset me. Sometimes it's the minister. Now I know some of you are thinking right now, those of you who know me are like, "Sue, I don't see how that's even possible. You what was it? What did you say? I thought you just said, seems really possible. Are you sure that's not what you said?" It's really interesting. We will, and by the way, here's a word you hear a lot when thrown around when regarding church people: hypocrites. You ever heard that phrase? "Well, I can't go to church because all the people there are hypocrites because they're not as nice as they're supposed to be," which I find fascinating because really the only thing that separates church people from non-church people is that we just know we need Jesus and they haven't figured it out yet. And why do we need Jesus? Because we're messed up, right? We're flawed. We need Jesus because we're not perfect. So I want you to take note of what they do here. They come to Samuel and they say, "We want a king." Now, I want you to take a second and think about the rationale. A human appointed judge has failed us, So what do we want to replace him? A human appointed king. Because that is going to work so much better. How many of you have ever gone to an election and voted and thought, now that I voted, everything's going to be better? And then, like, 6 months later, you're sitting in your house going, this is no better at all. It's fascinating, right? How we continue this pattern, how in the 3,000 years since this took place, really not that much has changed, right? People fail us. And why do people fail us? Because they're flawed and we're flawed, and that's just a reality of the world that we live in. It's just the way it is. But what's fascinating is when we take an opportunity to take the flaws of individuals and say, because this individual is flawed and has disappointed me, I'm going to reject God's institutions, because his institutions are flawed because they're controlled by flawed people. Isn't that interesting? How we've developed that mindset that is long, because everything is flawed, people are flawed. And I don't know if any of you have ever gone. Just curious, how many of you hate self checkout? Now I want you now, those of you who are saying that, how many of you, I should make you keep your hands up just so you can testify, but how many of you have ever, that hate self-checkout, have ever left a place where someone checked you out and complained about how incompetent the person checking you out was? And you got in the car and said, if they're that bad, I would be better off doing it myself. Does that sound familiar to anybody? You stand in line, and you see that person, and it's like you feel like they've probably been working there long enough to find the barcode on stuff, and they stand there and they turn it, and you're just like, I'm not in a hurry, just take your time. So now they've given us self checkout, and you know what? We don't like it. We don't like it. But this is what happens. We get failed by people at the stores. We get failed by. Did any of you go to the football game yesterday? By the way, I don't have to say which one, because State, Carolina, and ECU all lost. So if you just went to a football game yesterday, there's a chance that your people failed you. Right? If you're a Panthers fan, if it's a way of life, right? Your people fail you, and probably you're a whole lot better here eating lunch today than going home and watching that game and getting indigestion. But that's the world we live in, right? The people that we count on sometimes let us down. We get disappointed in their performance. We get disappointed in what they do. And so the children of Israel here have come to Samuel, and their excuse. And by the way, I would argue that it is an excuse. Is Samuel, your sons are incompetent. We don't like your sons. They failed us. And so we are now going to use that as an excuse to reject God, because God's representatives have failed us. How many of you think that there are people in the world who look at the church sometimes and feel like the church is not doing a really good job of representing God? You think that's a fairly safe assessment? That there are people out there who are going, the church really isn't doing a great job of representing God? And just for those of you who are thinking, I don't know why they think that, how many of you do a great job of representing God every day? Take a minute to think about that. And by the way, that does include driving on Greenville Boulevard. Now, we're going to look at a passage real quick from Colossians, just kind of so you know that this is not a new issue. The Apostle Paul, writing to the church in Colossae, says this. He says, so as those who have been chosen of God, holy and beloved, so Paul says, as God's people, put on a heart of compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and you're going to love this last one, patience. I may put this on the screen when we start sending people to lunch. So if your table's last, you will have to sit here and read this the whole time you're complaining about your table being last. Gentleness and patience. And then what does he say? Bearing with one another and forgiving each other. Whoever has a complaint against anyone. And so Paul's not confusing them about the prototype here. He says, do it how? Just as the Lord forgave you, so you also should. Now think about this. When we get irritated or upset with a minister or a church leader or just somebody who happens to be sitting at your table or somebody in your group or somebody in the kingdom who has not done what you think they should have done or have not done it the way you would have preferred it be done, or they have not conducted themselves in a way you think they should, what does Paul say you're supposed to do? Get mad and quit going to church. Nope. That's not what it says, right? What does it say? Well, as those chosen of God, which, by the way, if you're a Christian, you are one of those. As one chosen of God, you need to be the bigger person. So you put on a heart of compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, patience, and bear with one another. Bear with one another. Forgive each other. Whoever has a complaint against anybody. And just so you know how to do it, you do it the way the Lord forgives you, right? And by the way, you know when you can quit forgiving the people that around you that fail you? You can quit forgiving them when God stops forgiving you, right? That's a pretty good standard to live up to, right? Because guess how often God has to forgive you of something? Probably every 20 seconds, except when you're sleeping, right? He has to forgive you constantly because we constantly fail him and we constantly mess up. So this is the first one. All right, we're going to go back to that Samuel passage if we can. All right, there we go. Now, let's back up one. There we go. Fantastic. All right. So he says, can we back up one more? There we go. Okay, that's fantastic. All right, so he says, you've grown old. Your sons don't walk in your ways. So appoint a king for us to judge us like the other nations. Oh, now we're getting somewhere. We want to be like everybody else. How many of you think that churches sometimes make the mistake of trying to look too much like society? I want to be clear here because I think if I'm not specific in how I phrase this, I think some people are going to take this and run with it in a direction we're not supposed to go. Okay, one of the first things they teach you when you're studying to be a missionary is that when you go into another country, you have to learn to adapt Christianity to the culture you're going into. Okay, because there are certain cultures where they just it's a totally different culture. America, and I realize everybody thinks American culture came first, but we didn't. And I might even shock some of you to let you know, sometimes our culture's not even really the best one. So if you're a missionary, you have to go, and by the way, if you don't believe it, if any of you have ever been to, seen a church service in Africa, you know what they do in Africa at church that we don't do here? Well, most of us don't. They dance. And by the way, if you saw the praise team dance, you'd understand why we don't do that. But in some churches, man, when they worship, when they celebrate God, man, they get after it and they dance, right? And some of you going, Stuart, I wouldn't mind if we danced a little. What that usually means is you wouldn't mind if somebody else danced, but you wouldn't get out and dance with them. Okay. So we're not talking about adapting the gospel to other cultures so that it fits and makes sense and we can communicate the gospel efficiently. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about when God's people decide we want to look more like people who aren't God's people. We want the world to look at us and go, hey, you guys are just like us. This is fantastic. I can go to your church because I won't have to change a bit. You know, I can just come in. We have this phrase that we use in church, come as you are, you know, which that there is some biblical precedent for that, but there's no biblical precedent for staying like you are, right? The scripture expects us to grow and mature as Christians. Now, I'm going to pull up a passage now from 1 Peter. In my head, I picture that Peter is thinking about 1 Samuel when he writes this. Okay, I want you to listen to how Peter describes the church. Okay, and by the way, this is not like unique to the New Testament. This is how he would describe you this morning if you're a believer. He says, you are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for God's own possession. Okay, does that sound to you like he's saying you're different than everybody else? I'm a little disturbed that more of you didn't go, yeah, that sounds exactly what he's saying. You're a royal priesthood, a holy nation, you're a people for God's own possession, and here's why. So that you may proclaim the excellencies of him who has called you out of darkness. And by the way, who are you proclaiming that to? The people who aren't part of the royal nation, right? A people who are not part of the royal priesthood, people who are not yet part of the chosen race, people who are not part of the holy nation, these people who don't know Jesus yet. He says, you need to remember who you are. You are all these things, a people for God's own possession, so that you can go out and proclaim the excellencies of him who called you out of darkness. How many of you, when you're talking about church, talk about how excellent it is? Now take a minute and think about that, right? We say, God is excellent, he's amazing, he's awesome, but when I get together with his people, I don't really like it that much. It lasts too long. There was some comments yesterday, Stuart, your sermons are too long. I said, you think my sermon's too long? Wait till you get to heaven. And you get to one of them 1,000-year sermons, and you're going to be sitting there going, when Stuart speak? He only goes 40 minutes. We kind of missed that guy. Where is he? You've been called for his own possession so that you can proclaim the excellencies of him who called you out of darkness and into his marvelous light. Now, listen to this next line. Peter says, for once, you were not a people. Once upon a time, you were just people. You were just part of the world. That's just what you were. Once upon a time, for once, you weren't a people. But now, look at this. You're not just a people. You're what? You're the people. You're the people of God. You had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. So here's what's really important in this text. Peter goes into great detail to let us know that the church is not supposed to look just like society. The church isn't supposed to look like just like everybody else so they can feel better about how they are. The church was specifically called to be what? Different. We were called to be different. We're supposed to be different. Now, here's the problem. Sometimes we don't like being different, right? Now, in my life, I've known people who seem to thrive on being different. I've been accused on that on an occasion or two. Says, Stuart, you just like to be different. And I'm not going to lie, that's probably true. That is probably true. But the truth is, most of us really would just like to shuffle through life anonymously, wouldn't we? We don't want to draw attention to ourselves. We don't want people to know we're there. We just want to do our thing. I've heard people say this, Stuart, I just want to get through life. I want to be left alone. I don't want anyone to notice me. I just want to live my life. I just want to be like everybody else. I just want to blend into the crowd. Well, here's the problem. According to Peter, can we go back one slide? According to Peter, you cannot fulfill your mission as a Christian if you do that, because he says You have become these things so that you may proclaim the excellencies of him who's called you out of darkness. Now, imagine you were in a building, and there like you were in a high-rise building, and there was a fire. Let's say the fire was down on the 20th floor, and you're up on the 40th floor, and somebody went to that guy on the 20th floor and said, "Hey, man, listen, there's a lot of people in this building above us that are going to die unless you run upstairs and tell them there's a fire." Now, can you imagine if the guy who was told to do that went upstairs and goes, "Man, I just really don't want to stand out. I don't want to draw attention to myself." And so he just walked through every floor going, "Fire. Hot fire." And you're sitting in your little cubicle in your office, and you don't hear that guy because he doesn't want to say it loud enough, that he doesn't want to draw attention to himself. He doesn't want people to see him. So let me ask you a question. What happens to you? You're going to burn up. You know why you're going to burn up? Because the guy with the news that could save you didn't want to draw attention to himself. Now let me ask you a question. How many people in the world are sitting in a cubicle right now in danger of burning up for eternity because you don't want to draw attention to yourself by warning them about the fire? Well, that's not good, is it? But we just want to be like the world. We want to be, man, I just don't want to stand out. I don't want to draw attention to myself, because you know what? You know what happens when you draw attention to yourself? People say ugly things. How many of you are on social media? I have found social media to be the most fascinating place in the world. It's like a world that doesn't exist, but when it does, oh, it's just fantastic. So last night, I was watching, when I got home last night, I decided to turn on TV and watch a little bit of the Tennessee football game. Because I went to college in Knoxville. I used to root for Tennessee. I used to go to some of their games. I enjoyed Tennessee's games. I enjoy it when they win. Of course, I enjoy making fun of my friends when they lose. So it's the best of both worlds, really. And so I sat down last night, and I was watching the game. Tennessee gave up 63 points to South Carolina. I didn't even know they still had a team. 63 points they gave up. You almost have to be trying to let somebody score to give up 63 points. So I got on Facebook and I typed this message: "Tennessee's defense is a dumpster fire." That's it. I just made an observation. And by the way, it's not a controversial observation because they gave up 63 points. You know how many comments I had this morning when I got up? Like 14 comments. Some people I didn't even know commented on my statement that a team that gave up 63 points, that their defense was a dumpster fire. And I'm like, I don't even know some of these people. Some of these people are calling me out on social media because I said a team whose defense gave up 63 points is a dumpster fire. I don't even know these people. This is what happens in the world now when you make a statement that's controversial, even if it's not really controversial. If you make a true statement that some people don't like, what's going to happen? Oh, they're going to let you hear it. People get real brave behind a keyboard, by the way. Have you noticed that? There's a lot of keyboard bravery, people who would never say that to your face, but man, they get on that keyboard, they're going, "I'm going to let you hear something." Maybe that's why we've become like this, that we want to be anonymous and we don't want people to know what's going on. As a church, we don't want to let people know that we're different. Let's go back to that Samuel text. I want you to think about the children of Israel and how hard this must have been. They've moved into the promised land, and on every side of them, they are surrounded by people who worship gods that are different than theirs. Their customs are different. Their laws are different. Everything's different. And they're in amongst all these people, and they're going, "We just want to look like everybody else, man. We just want to be like everybody. We don't want to stand out. Samuel, we want a king. Appoint a king for us to judge us like all the other nations. We just want to be like everybody else." So let's go to that next verse. this thing was displeasing in the sight of Samuel when they said, give us a king to judge us. And so Samuel prayed to the Lord. And the Lord said to Samuel, listen to the voice of the people in regard to all that they say to you. Well, that's interesting, isn't it? God says, give them what they want. Any of you ever think sometimes that when you keep bugging God about something that's not good for you, at some point he finally says, okay, fine, have it. You want it so bad? Here it is. The Lord said to Samuel, listen to him. Listen to the voice of the people in regard to all that they say to you. For they haven't rejected you, but they have rejected me from being king over them. Like all the deeds which they have done since the day I brought them from Egypt to this day, in that they have forsaken me and served other gods, so they are doing it to you also. Now here's what I find fascinating about this. And I want you to think real carefully about this as we start making this application to how we view the world we live in. These people come to Samuel and they say that they want a king, right? They want a king. And they blame it on Samuel's sons, and they excuse it by saying, we just want to be like everybody else. But what does God tell Samuel? Does God tell Samuel, your kids are lousy. This is all their fault. Is that what he said? No. Does he say, well, you know, I understand. I've given a lot of rules that other countries don't have, and I understand they just want to blend in and not be bothered. So, you know, this is really my fault for giving them too many rules. Is that what he says? No. What does he say? Samuel, give them what they want, but just remember this. They're not rejecting you. They're not rejecting your sons. They're not rejecting anything but me. Their rejection of me is masked by their unhappiness with people and their desire to look like other people. But at the end of the day, the rejection really is about me. Any of you ever done something that you wanted to do? Did something? Did I say done something? You ever done something you wanted to do? How many of you have ever gone someplace where you had made up your mind before you got there you were not going to enjoy yourself? Any of you ever been to something like that? Where you had made up your mind. You know what? This is going to be lousy and I don't want to go. Now, when you get there, what do you normally find? A reason to be unhappy, right? And it doesn't take long. All that's got to happen is somebody just got to look at you funny or say something to you that might be mildly offensive, or it might be too warm in the building or too cool in the building, or maybe the TV is not on and you want to watch the game. But be assured, if you've already made up your mind that you don't want to be there, guess what? You don't need a good excuse. Just any old excuse will do. I want to say this. I'm going to say it about me, so I don't say it about any individual in here, so nobody can say Stuart's talking about me. Because if I was talking about you, I'd call your name. Some of you know me well enough to know that. So I'm just going to talk about me. If I want to be in church and I want to worship the Lord, and I want to receive all the benefits from being a part of his family, you are not going to mess that up for me bad enough I don't want to come. I ain't giving y'all that kind of power over me, right? If I want to go to the football game, I ain't going to let the crazy people sitting behind me ruin the game for me. I'm going to go to the game. If I'm going to go to the grocery store because I want to go, I ain't going to let the fact I got to check myself out be a reason not to go to the grocery store. I'm not going to sit in the house and starve despite the self-checkout line, right? If you really want to do something, you know what you do? You do it. And you know what? The crazy people that get it, that are all around you, interfere with it. I'm going to go do what I want to do. But if you don't want to do something, it's really hard for people to make you feel like you want to. Right? So here's the moral of this story. If you want to be in fellowship with Jesus Christ, your Lord and Savior, you won't let other people stop you from doing that. You won't let a minister or a church leader or somebody in the pew or the table next to you, you won't let some cranky person who said something ugly or looked at you funny, you won't let them stop you from being in fellowship with God. Because if you want to be in fellowship with God, you really aren't going to let somebody else stop you from that, are you? And if you want to be one of God's chosen people who were called out from this world to be a light in a dark place about God, you're not going to let other people ruin that. You're going to be, you know what? You ain't got to like it. You ain't got to agree with what I do. I've been called to be different, and I'm going to embrace that difference, and I'm going to own it, and I'm going to live it, and I'm going to love it. And if you don't love it, guess what? No Thanksgiving dinner at the church for you. Right? When these people demanded a king, God says, ultimately, whatever excuses they're making, really, you know what they're doing? They're rejecting me. They're rejecting me. They may be blaming it on Samuel's sons. Maybe they're blaming it on the people that live in the communities around them. But I want you to notice what God says at the end of this. He said, like all the deeds which they've done since the day I brought them out of Egypt, they've forsaken me. This is how they are. And they may make excuses, but at the end of the day, this is just really about one simple thing. They're rejecting me. So here's what I want to close with this morning. And I asked the praise team if they would to start kind of moving up this direction to lead us in our communion song. Here's what I want to leave you with today. Whatever has happened to you in your life in a church that has turned you off, that has irritated you, that's made you question your relationship with the church or with God, I want to give you a really carefully thought out phrase. Don't let other people ruin your eternity. Okay? Don't let some other person mess up your eternal life. It don't make no sense. It don't make any sense. These people were getting ready to get in a bad place with God because Samuel had some stupid kids. Or because the people across the river were making fun of them. And they're getting ready to lose their relationship with God. They're getting ready to reject him because of those really bad excuses. So my challenge for you is to not let those kinds of really unfortunate excuses drive a wedge between you and God. Because if you live long enough, some minister's going to offend you. Some church leader's going to make a decision that you don't like. Some elder deacon's going to do something. Somebody in the ladies' circle is going to say something. You're going to go out there and get to my mashed potatoes and they're going to be gone. Because I didn't let you go fast enough. You know, you're going to be upset. Satan is always going to give you something to be upset about if you want to be upset about something. But if you want to love God and serve him and fellowship with his people, don't give Satan that kind of power over you so that every indiscretion becomes a deal breaker in your relationship with God.